straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 319, brought to you by Bud Light, powered by Hook'em.com. I'm Cedric Golden, joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Texas, Oklahoma State for all the marbles in the Big 12, Duck. 11 a.m. at Jerry World, and we have an award-winning guest, friend of the podcast. She used to get it done at the Oklahoman, but now she's taking her talents to selloutcrowd.com. And she's also, Duck, the host, the illustrious host of the Jenny Carlson Show. I'm not going to tell you her name. And if you don't know her name by now, then you probably didn't go to school. Jenny, how are you today?
I'm good. Listen, some of my cohorts at selloutcrowd.com have fancy names for their podcast. Like, you guys have a fancy name for your podcast.
No, we
don't. I couldn't come up with anything I liked. So we just went generic. It's the Jenny Carlson Show.
I love the Jenny Carlson Show. I love the sound of the Jenny Carlson Show. I will tell you guys out there listening, when does it drop, Jen?
The podcast?
Yes.
The show that I did with you guys will probably be out sometime on Thursday. So lots of time before the Big 12 title game for people to digest all the Texasness that you guys shared.
Well, this drops on Thursday as well. Our apologies for the drop off in quality of guests at the Jenny Carlson Show. Duck and I were on there. And if you want to get another perspective, go to selloutcrowd.com and check it out. Jen, tell us why Oklahoma State is going to beat Texas on Saturday.
Well, because they've been doubted and come through so many times this year. It's really been remarkable. They lost to South Alabama. Your team, the team you guys cover, beat Alabama. The team I covered lost to South Alabama. So
glad Texas didn't have to play South Alabama.
Maybe that was the hangup.
Played the right Alabama. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, their non-conference was just sort of an increasingly less impressive and less impressive. You know, they opened with Central Arkansas, did not play well, and you thought, okay, opener. They were trying to figure out their quarterback situation. They were rotating three quarterbacks at the time. They were trying to figure out their running back situation. You thought, okay, well, you know, let's see what happens. They go to Arizona State. They win at Arizona State, which, you know, was a little closer than you expected, but, you know, went on the road against the Power Five. Okay. But then they come back to Stillwater and lose to South Alabama. And it was ugly start to finish. I mean, this was a game that they got dominated physically. They got dominated on the line. And you're thinking, wait a second. South Alabama's dominating a Power Five team on the line. That seemed like a recipe for utter disaster. Frankly, at the time, you look at Oklahoma State's schedule, which wasn't the toughest of schedules. They didn't, as you mentioned, no Texas game until this weekend in the Big 12 championship game. No Texas on their schedule. They weren't going to play Texas Tech, which obviously before the season, we thought they were going to be in the mix, didn't have them on the schedule. You know, they had avoided some of the teams you thought might be the biggest challenges, but you look at the schedule after that South Alabama loss and you're like, can this team get bowl eligible? I mean, can they find four more wins? It didn't seem possible at that point. So the fact that they have won seven games since then, 7-2 in the league, just a remarkable turnaround, did some things offensively to activate superpowers from Ollie Gordon, and that the rest has been history there. And their defense, while still young and not great, they're able to get the job done. But it's been a remarkable turn of events. I really did not think that this was possible for this team.
And it's so quirky and squirrely almost. I mean, that kind of start leads to player only meetings, and oh my God, is Mike Gundy lost it? And you mentioned rotating three quarterbacks and obviously giving Ollie Gordon a heavier workload because he had 109 yards those first three games. What did Mike Gundy kind of do? Is that when he went to Bowman full time and that's when he realized Gordon could be a special talent?
Well, you know, I think that they had started to turn a bit of a corner after South Alabama. They did decide to start Alan Bowman at Iowa State, and he wasn't perfect. But remember, this is a guy in his sixth year of college football who was essentially on the shelf his 2 years at Michigan. He hardly played at all after he left Texas Tech. So this is a guy that hadn't played very much. And so getting the rust off, he hadn't exactly had a chance to do that in non-conference. And they'd been splitting those first team reps in practice. So I think a lot of that comfortability that quarterbacks build with practice and with time and with experience, Alan Bowman really didn't have it. So he even mentioned after Iowa State, and I think it was even maybe a month or so later, he mentioned to me in an interview, he said, you know, this is going to take some time. You know, they're still developing chemistry, still developing rhythm. So making the decision to go with Alan Bowman as a starting quarterback was a big one. You know, who knows, if they'd have picked one of the other guys they were rotating, they might have had the same sort of benefit of practice and experience, but they had to pick a starter. They just had to pick a starter.
You can't play three.
They were not only playing three guys. I don't know if anybody remembers this. If you didn't watch him, and why would you have watched him play South Alabama or Central Arkansas? But they were not only playing three, they were dividing it. A third, a third, a third. One guy started, played until sometime in the second quarter. The next guy came in, played until sometime late in the third quarter, and then the last guy came in. It was the goofiest thing you've ever seen.
This is not Walmart. You don't work three shifts. I'm on third shift this week. I'm working 11 to 7.
It was literally the starter, the middle reliever, and the closer. I mean, it was just the darndest thing. And I listen, all three guys, if you look at their stats between Bowman, Garrett Rangel, and Gunnar Gundy, their stats weren't that much different. But at some point, you've got to let a guy get the first team reps. Again, to me, it wasn't as much about the game as it was about the practice. Those guys needed to develop some chemistry with the rest of the offense. So that was huge. And then Ollie Gordon being the guy, they went to him, and they not only went to him as the guy, the 20 plus carries a game guy out of the backfield, but they also reduced some of their RPO plays. They were very much like most teams in college football, running that run pass option. But Ollie Gordon is really good when he gets going straight ahead. And they just said, you know what? We're not going to mess around. We're going to put the ball in his hands and let him go ahead. And it's worked really, really well. To think he only had 106 yards coming out of non-conference and he leads the country in rushing, it's even more remarkable to think what has come since they figured out what they wanted to do offensively.
I'll tell you what, Kirk and I were at Yard House in Arlington. Good restaurant. And we got him to change the channel. Remember, Duck, they had golf. LPGA was on every. I'm like, what's going on in here?
Is it not September?
Football in here. I think it was Friday night. And K-State was at Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. And we all had picked K-State because we kind of assumed Oklahoma State was dead in the water. And we looked. And Oklahoma State is just running over him. And I go, who's that running back? Who is that guy? He's great. And how did they lose to South Alabama? And it was Ollie Gordon. And we asked several players this week about Ollie Gordon. And the word that kept coming out of their mouths, Jen, was downhill. He runs downhill. That's the ultimate compliment you can pay to a running back, because they know he's coming at you. And to hear that lets me know that there's going to be an interesting matchup, that great Texas defensive front against Ollie Gordon and company. What do you think's going to happen early in that game in the trenches? How have they tried to establish him? Do they pound him? Do they dump it off to him? How do they get him going early in games?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because some of his longer runs, you know, he is a guy with that home run capability, the 50, 60, 70 yard runs. We've seen it at West Virginia. If you haven't seen Ollie Gordon in action, go watch him in a West Virginia game. He was unbelievable. So that's the type of things he can do, but that tends to come a little bit later in the game. He had a big run to start out the game against BYU last Saturday. But a lot of the stuff that they do early is kind of, I feel like it's a little bit like you know, the water sort of softening up the rock a little bit, because mm-hmm. they don't necessarily go for the long stuff early. You know, he is going between the tackles. It is 2-3 yards. You know, it's the shorter stuff to start, and you feel like it's just sort of a willingness to not maybe get those big gainers out of the gate. If they get a couple yards, if they keep moving forward, maybe they have to punt it a little more than they'd like. But ultimately, mm-hmm. if that's softening the ground a little bit to make a way for Ollie Gordon late, I think that's what they've decided to do. And he's a guy, you know, he's a bigger back, you know, and honestly, I said this to you guys when you were on my show a little bit ago, he looks like a Texas, a Longhorn running back with his size, with his tenacity. He runs hard, guys. That's one of the things about Ollie Gordon that you'll see. He runs hard regardless of whether it's right up the gut, if it's some sort of, you know, maybe a reverse of field or a you know, switch outside. He runs hard no matter where it is. And he's got really good vision and patience. He'll wait on blocks to get, you know, do the effective thing and find a spot. He's got good vision, good patience, good speed. He's obviously got that breakaway speed that you like. He can catch it out of the backfield too. So they can activate him in a variety of ways to try to get him going. But I do think, you know, I think he's going to, I don't know. I'm not going to, you would never predict that he would get a certain amount of yardage. I think he's going to have some yardage, but to me, this game is going to depend on Oklahoma State staying somewhat balanced offensively. He's got to be good. And frankly, when the opportunity presents itself, he probably needs to be great. You know, if there's a chance to beat a guy in the secondary and go long, he's got to do it. But then they got to figure out a way to get the ball to, you know, whether it's Brennan Presley, their slot guy, Leon Johnson, a guy from, guys, you're going to need to go to Google Maps for this. George Fox University.
I love that.
we decided to take a little tour on Google Maps earlier this week and see his home stadium at George Fox. there are about 7,527 stadiums in the state of Texas that are bigger than George Fox University.
Is that Division III?
Yes.
Where is George Fox? Where is that?
He put me on the spot. I think it's out. No, it's in state of Washington. Sorry. I momentarily blanked on that. Yeah, small. And they actually, here's the thing, guys, he's a great story. They wanted to redshirt him as a coming from D3. They wanted to give him a full year, give him a chance to develop physically. And then they got so hurt at wide receiver, they basically called him in and said, listen, you can tell us no. You can tell us you want a redshirt, because that was the plan. He was on board with it. They were on board with it. You can redshirt if you want. You can tell us no, but we need you to play. He came in and played, and he has been phenomenal for them. But this is it. He wasn't playing in stadiums that are as big as Jerry World, guys. So the fact that he gets to play a Big 12 championship game at Jerry World, I mean, if there's somebody to be happy for at Oklahoma State, I know, you know, Oklahoma State fans might or might not be happy for Mike Gundy. I don't know. But they can be happy for Leon Johnson, because that's a heck of a story. So, but they're wide receivers. They got to get the ball to some of those guys to balance out what they're trying to do with Ollie Gordon.
You know, college football, you find these little nuggets, and I don't know if he knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who knew Mike Gundy's uncle or what, but that's a fascinating story. Mike Gundy did say this week that Texas made a late run at Ollie Gordon, like in the 11th hour, and said no. So, can you imagine if he had, you know, before Jonathan Brooks got hurt and now Ollie Gordon, this, because, you know, if their record's better, if they have one loss instead of three, he's a Heisman candidate, legitimate candidate. And he probably would be anyway if there weren't 1,000 great quarterbacks this year.
Well, yeah, it doesn't really matter how good the running backs are anymore. It's a quarterback award, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think until he had a clunker, well, Oklahoma State had a clunker of a game at UCF.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously had gotten control of their own destiny back in their hands after they won Bedlam. And you think, okay, they're going down to UCF, who's not been good stopping the run. Ollie Gordon might have a huge day. He could really hit the accelerator on a Heisman Trophy candidacy. Instead, he goes down there and rushes for 25 yards, and they get beat by 42.
45-3.
How did that happen? I mean, that was right after OU, right?
Right after OU. So
we're watching the scores, and I look at Kirk, and I go, what the hell, Mullet?
They're getting murdered.
How did he lose 45-3 to a team that gave up 27 points in the fourth quarter to Baylor?
I know. It was horrendous. It was horrendous. And truthfully, guys, it was one of those moments, again, when you think, same way coming out of South Alabama, you know, what now? You know, can they come back? I mean, that was a destruction. They got absolutely mauled down there. So, you know, what happens? How can they recover? Then they go on the road the next week at Houston, and they go behind by 2 touchdowns quick. That's and you're thinking, all right, now they're toast. They're toast. Come Gundy back at Houston. And then they we're do it again against then. BYU. It was crazy.
We thought Gundy was on his way out. We really did. And how could you not? How could you not at that time?
But he's never on the way out. What I'd like to know is, you know, some job openings coming up, and he's been mentioned before for Tennessee or Arkansas or wherever. And I guess has he kind of made his peace with that, and he's home, and that's where he's going to stay? Or I thought maybe A&M might make a run at him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, A&M and the craziness of Mike Gundy would have been quite a marriage, wouldn't it?
That would have been awesome. I'd have loved it. I would have.
That would have been fun.
But personally, I think Mike Gundy is where he's going to be. Now, I'm not saying that there might not, you know, he might not play footsie with some other people. But here's the thing that's changed over the last couple of years. He's got a new university president and a new athletic director that he works for now. And I don't necessarily know that he didn't have a good relationship with Burns Hargis, their president, before. Right. But he definitely had some animosity and some difficult dealings with Mike Holder, their former athletic director. Mike was very close with Boone Pickens. Mike Holder's dead.
Who's dead, and that's another RIP T Boone, but that doesn't kill Gundy there. The fact that T Boone's dead is not a bad thing for Gundy.
There was a lot of knocking of heads between the two of them. Let's put it that way. And since Mike Holder was a T Boone guy, T Boone gave his money to OSU in large part because of Mike Holder. That was a huge point of contention. Mike Gundy didn't always like what came with that. So I think that has changed Mike Gundy's outlook on how he feels about being at Oklahoma State. I think a lot of that before was, I don't necessarily know that he wanted a different job. I think he just wanted different bosses. And so that now that he's got different bosses, I think he feels a lot more certain about his future at Oklahoma State. So, yeah. I mean, to me, the bigger question is, how long is he going to coach? Because, you know, there for a while, he's 56, 57. Right. He's not an old 56, 57, but at some point, do you say, okay, I've done what I want to do. I'm ready to do something else. I don't foresee Mike Gundy coaching into his 70s. So at what point does he say, you know what, I want to go do something different? I don't know. I think the runway's gotten longer with the change in leadership at the university, but I guess I don't foresee 65-year-old Mike Gundy still coaching the Cowboys. So, does that mean we're talking about within the next 8 or so years he's done? Mm-hmm. Maybe, but I don't think he's leaving Stillwater.
Yeah,
here's the thing we need to ask, Jen. Texas and Oklahoma are out of here.
Yep.
That could be a Big 12 takeover. The Mullet could take over the Big 12. K-State's always good.
Yep.
There's turmoil in Baylor. What went on with TCU? The Sonny Dykes wagon is ground to a halt.
Yeah.
It's there for the taking. Those newcomers... Houston fired Dana.
Yeah.
Cincinnati didn't show up this year. BYU, while a bowl team, was not good. And UCF is up and down.
Yeah.
I think the Big 12, I think he could write a new chapter of his career with some Big 12 championships post-Oklahoma and Texas. Are there conversations happening about that? I mean, I know it's futuristic, but – he's still the most senior coach in this conference, and they're never horrible. They're always pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I think before the year started, there was conversation about, you know, Oklahoma State and their place in the new Big 12. Obviously, with the addition of the four corner schools from the Pac-12, I think Utah is a team that you've got, a football program that you got to say, you know, what, how are they going to play? I mean, they've been good in the Pac-12 for years, even with some really good teams out there. They've been consistently top notch. So I think between Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and Utah, considering where those three teams are right now, seems like to me those are the teams that are most likely to sort of be able to grab control of the Big 12. If there is a team that can grab control, seems like those are the best three candidates that will exist in next year. But obviously, if Oklahoma State's able to go to Arlington this weekend and score a huge upset, if they're able to go to a New Year's Six Bowl, if they're able to build on the momentum of, you know, now 2 years to the Big 12 title game in the last three, a Big 12 championship, on and on. To me, that's huge. I mean, I think that that's really going to be big for going into the new, you know, revamped Big 12. I think if you looked, this isn't as much a part of it, but Oklahoma State overall, if you look at across the board athletically, while men's basketball is not good right now, pretty much every other sport at Oklahoma State, you would say they can go contend and win Big 12 championships in the new Big 12. So I think that that may also give them a little bit of a boost forward. But clearly, if they can wrest some control of the Big 12 away from everybody else next year and moving forward, I mean, I think they've got a chance to be sort of the power broker in that regard for the Big 12. And that would be, I mean, obviously for years, everybody, you know, it was OU, Texas. Before that, it was OU, Texas, Texas A&M, Nebraska. So if Oklahoma State could find itself in a position that, you know, when they talk in Big 12 meetings, everybody's sitting up and paying attention, that'd be a huge move for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And they recruit well in Texas. I mean, Ollie Gordon's a Texan. I don't know how many Texans they have on their roster, but it's very similar to OU where they recruited.
I think it's about 40 is what Oklahoma State has now.
That's a lot. It'll be interesting once Utah and Arizona – Arizona's having a great bounce back here. Once they start recruiting in Texas and Dion, you know, that'll be really interesting too. You mentioned Gundy. What would he do if he, say, 2 or 3 years from now, he calls it quits? Does he become a cattle rancher, a circus clown, go into politics? What do you think he would do?
That's become a great barber, question.
Be a barber.
Yeah. the opportunities are endless. I think he probably just kind of disappears into the Payne County background, into the wilderness, the farmland. They've got a spread there at Stillwater that I think he can just go and be. But you know, I think he has done some of these coaches roundtables during some of the national championship type games. And Listen, guys. Barry Trammell, who you guys know, my cohort, my sidekick, love him. Barry has made the pitch that Mike Gundy press conferences need to be aired live.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever network is smart enough to pick him up on Mondays. And I'm against it for this reason. I'm afraid if it's broadcast live, he's going to clam up and he's not going to say anything.
You can't. You can't clam up, can he? Is that possible?
That's the thing, though. Some of these coaches' roundtables he's done, he's been pretty out there. So yeah. I don't know if he could be like a in the booth type of guy. I don't know if he's got that in him, but he'd be entertaining as like an analyst in the studio because he says whatever in the heck springs to his mind.
He could be the new Mike Leach.
Oh my gosh!
And he loves Prince, so I'm.
Your dad.
He had me at Prince.
There's no football coach in all of college coaching that references 80s movies as much as Mike Gundy does.
That's why I like it.
What's your favorite movies?
He talks about Animal House. Animal House is probably it. He talks about Animal House all the time.
That figures. That fits.
It's really bizarre because the Oklahoma State media contingent, while there's some old heads like me and Barry and Garen Emig or other columnists that sell out crowd, there's also the student journalism program at Oklahoma State is robust. They're big time with their sports media. So there's always a bunch of college kids there. And Mike Gundy will make this reference to some 80s movies, and about, you know, a third of us are falling off our chairs, and the other two thirds in the room are going, what the heck is he talking about?
I love it. 16 Candles, the John Hughes movies are my favorite. Breakfast Club.
Me too.
Don't leave out Shawshank, Sid.
Shawshank is, yeah. But when I think of the 80s, I don't, Shawshank's my favorite movie. But when I think of the 80s, I think of the comedies. I think of the Eddie Murphy
Breakfast
movie.
Club.
Yeah.
Say anything.
Definitely.
Jen, always a pleasure to have you on. Check her out at selloutcrowd.com. Her musings, her podcast, Barry Trammell's in that mix. Garen Emig is in that mix. And we are looking so forward to seeing you at Jerry World on Saturday, right, at 11 a.m. Longhorns v. Cowboys. And there's been a lot of Cowboy wins in that stadium this year. So it would be an upset, but hey, that's why they play the games. We'll see what happens. But Jen, we appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing you up there.
Can't wait, guys. Two times in a year, we don't often get to do that. So I'm looking forward to it, and I'll see you at Jerry World.
We're blessed. Stay safe. Thanks, Jenny.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. On Second Thought.
Chuck, so great to talk to Jenny Carlson. Always dropping the knowledge on everything OSU and OU. And it's going to be a shame. We will talk to her in the future because Oklahoma is going to be in the SEC, but we probably won't care as much about Oklahoma State, but we'll still dip our toe in that OU water for sure. I don't think that Oklahoma State's going to beat Texas. I think Texas is double digits better than OSU because of their defense, because their defense is so up front, so good. But that Ollie Gordon matchup is going to be really fun. We do agree, Doug, that a loss, and we can stop talking about the CFP. But since the game's not till Saturday, let's talk about the CFP.
So did I hear you say you're picking to win by double digits?
Yes, I am.
Oh.
Absolutely, I am.
Interesting. What kind of score you got?
I'm still kind of up in the air about it, but something along the lines of 38-24. Yeah.
I was thinking something like 38-31 or 38-27.
Team doesn't give up 30 points in games, Doug.
They don't. But
Alabama scored 24 on these guys in Tuscaloosa. They don't give up big numbers like that. They don't. So, and I think that Alan Bowman, and I will say this about Alan Bowman, Doug. He was a quarterback at Tech in 2020, and against the Longhorns, he threw for 331 yards and five touchdowns, but he threw three picks, and Texas won easily 52-31. But so he's had his moments against Texas's defense, but this is a different defense. And while they are a little suspect at times on the back end, they're getting that push up front from Sweat, from Murphy, from Broaden, from Collins, from Sorrell, from Burke, and their linebackers are really good. And so I just think that goes in Texas's favor. I just don't see Oklahoma State putting up massive numbers, even with the best running back in the country.
Well, they would scare me a little bit. One, Texas rarely blows out teams like they did Texas Tech. We haven't seen that this year where they're beating good teams by three touchdowns or more. Should have. They had those kind of leads, you know, on Houston and K-State and TCU. And I could see Texas obviously being very motivated, no question about it, maybe jumping out to a big lead. But this is an Oklahoma State team you got to kill. You got to put a stake through their heart because –
And they will go. They will go away if you land that knockout punch early. They will go away. They have,
but they didn't last week. They were losing to BYU 24-6 at the halftime.
BYU
owned the second half. I know, and BYU wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. You know,
we saw them.
We saw them up close, and they weren't very impressive to us. So, they need to, come out swinging. And I think they will. They'll probably come out passing where you figure, you know, Oklahoma State would come out running. But they've got good receivers, as Jenny was telling us. So they're not devoid of talent. One question I was going to ask her, I didn't, like, where would you rank this Oklahoma State team in Gundy's years? And talent-wise, I mean, they probably doesn't compare to some of those, you know, because they've had really good talent on those teams. So
good quarterbacks, Zach Robinson. They had DeJuan Woods, Donovan Woods, Tatum Bell at running back.
This is
the best run. This is the best Oklahoma State running back. And Chuba was good, but this guy's in that Thurman Thomas, Barry Sanders type way he's been rumbling.
Got 20 touchdowns. He's got 8 in the last 2 games. Averaging 132 yards a game. He's going to be an All-American. We know that. He could be a Heisman thing. I mean, hell, Marvin Harrison was a Heisman candidate until they lost to Michigan, although you and I both know it's going to go to a quarterback, especially. Marvin Harrison would have had to have Ohio State beat Michigan and, you know, have a big game. And he's got the name. It would have to be somebody of that order. And the thing, Ollie – Gordon, one thing I respect about him, he came from nowhere, just like Barry Sanders did.
Self-made.
Barry Sanders was a kick returner the year before, and then he had no hype coming into the into that season, and then ran away with the Heisman because he looked so good. So you mentioned the CFP. You know, I think you and I both think they got a real solid chance of getting in, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Florida State's got to lose. I mean, Florida State just has to lose.
That's the big key.
That's the big key. If Florida State loses and Texas takes care of business, then I think Texas gets in. I do. I think they have a really good chance of getting in. I would hate for, you know, I don't think Alabama's going to beat Georgia. I don't, Doc.
I don't.
And I think that Washington is going to lose to Oregon, and Oregon's like a 9.5-point favorite. So if those things happen, if Georgia takes care of business, if Florida State loses to Louisville, and that's the biggest if, because Louisville just lost to Kentucky, and that's the biggest if. And if Oregon beats Washington, then the Longhorns are going to be number 4. That's my opinion. That's how
it works. And a lot of people have been talking about Oregon. You know, I had them ahead of Texas in my AP vote and to – a lot of people's disgust, you know, and
they love coming after you.
Well, the Pac-12 is the best conference. I think most of us would agree with that.
Yeah.
And they pass the eye test almost every week, whereas Texas hasn't. They've won games. They got the resume. They got the win over Alabama. But I think, I mean, you look at Herb Street and all those people, and you look at the committee, which has Oregon ahead of Texas. But Oregon hasn't won a conference championship, and neither has Texas. But the selection committee historically has put a lot of stock in winning your conference.
It's a big deal.
That's a good team on the long haul. So even if Washington, you know, sweeps them and knocks Oregon out, obviously the Oregon's done. But you can make the case Texas has a better win over Alabama than Oregon does over Oregon State. You know, Alabama's ranked 8th. And Oklahoma State 17th in the CFP. So they could really kind of further its case if they can beat Oklahoma State and if they can beat them impressively. But they should get in over Alabama.
I think they're the best one-loss team in the country.
I just think, you know, the committee would send a terrible message to don't schedule good games if they put in Alabama over Texas. And the fact that, that was the second week of the season. Who cares? You don't get to pick when you play, and most people don't play non-conference. You know,
that's the question I hate. That's the question more than anything is, if Texas and Alabama played today,
they're
not playing today.
And even if they did, they don't know Texas would lose.
We don't know that. We just know that Alabama – I mean, that was the one thing. I mean, our colleague Suzanne Halliburton one time asked Mac, why are you so good after an Oklahoma loss? Why do you always seem to bounce back after an Oklahoma loss? And my answer to that is, you don't have to play Oklahoma anymore. That's why.
That helps.
That's why. Helps. So if Alabama has been great, and they have been, they've been great since they lost to Texas. But that doesn't mean that Texas can't get after Alabama. Texas should have beat them last season.
And not only that,
Ryan Watts doesn't come in hot. Then our conversations about Texas are a lot different.
Mm-hmm. And Alabama beats Auburn, a 6-6 team, on a miracle play.
Why are you rushing three when you've been bringing the heat all day, and all of a sudden he's back there making a sandwich, waiting on his guy to get open? Crazy.
Well, and I wrote my nine things this week. If anybody else had beaten out Auburn on a miracle prayer, I'd be going, why are you barely beating Auburn, a 6-6 team, which just lost to New Mexico State?
Sorry, got
pounded, you know. So I think Texas is getting some injustice at this stage. We'll see what happens come Sunday.
Hey, before we get out of here, Duck, our friends in College Station made a big hire. Mike Elko, the former DC, went 16-9 at Duke. He comes over to take over for the departed Jimbo Fisher and that $76 million Fort Knox bank account that he's got. I like the hot Duck. We both liked Elko before this, and they didn't go Lane Kiffin. They didn't go Kyle Whittingham or any of those guys. I don't know that they needed to go with a huge name. I think this is a sensible hire and maybe not sexy, but it could prove fruitful for the Aggies.
Mm-hmm. One thing, it's weird too, because I mentioned that, you know, they hired an Ivy League grad from New Jersey, you know, at A&M, which was kind of odd on the face, but he is a good coach. You have a small sample size, but 2 years at Duke. And ACC's been down the last couple of years. Clemson's been way down, even though they're playing so much better. North Carolina is fallen off despite a great quarterback in Drake May. So, and I saw today where Bobby Petrino is probably going back to Arkansas offensive coordinator. So, you know, who knows what Elko's offense is going to look like. It makes sense. I think he's a good guy and a good coach and very smart. So maybe he won't get in his own way. So, and he's kind of known as a really good recruiter. So maybe they've got the next R.C. Slocum in College Station. Who knows?
That would be great. That would be great. It's going to be fun to see him in the program leading the charge, especially now that the Longhorns and Aggies are going to be getting busy. They announced, Duck, they're going to be playing November 30th of 2024, and that's a Saturday, Duck. That means that we can eat our turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And then enjoy college football on Friday and then go to College Station on Saturday. I think that works for me.
Saturday. I like that. I like that they respected that tradition and that rivalry. So hopefully they do the same for Texas OU and everybody be happy.
Everybody's going to be happy either way, because football season is football season. This is the biggest game of the Steve Sarkisian era coming up on Saturday. Horns v. Oklahoma State Cowboys at 11 a.m. We gave you all the dope on it. We gave you the perfect primer with Jenny Carlson all over that matchup. And we're looking so forward to seeing you at the game. And if you're watching on TV, that's cool too. We'll be back to clear up whatever happened, give you the fallout on next week. That'll do it for episode 318 of On Second Thought. Our big thanks go to Jenny Carlson and our producer, Chandler Hoffley. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.